Cebu Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor $15 Now, a community hearing on the City of Portland's fair wage policy. This hearing will happen Monday, October 20th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the SEIU Union Hall at 3536 Southeast 26th Avenue in Portland. Portland's fair wage policy was adopted by the city in 1995 and is currently $10.38 an hour plus benefits. The community hearing will have testimony from workers, and Portland City Commissioners will be present and will be invited to respond to the workers' testimony. Again, that's $15 Now, a community hearing on the City of Portland's fair wage policy. Monday, October 20th, 7 p.m. at the SEIU Union Hall, 3536 Southeast 26th Avenue in Portland. More information about this event can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cebu Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Cross Cultural Rhythms at the 40th Avenue Garage, a showcase of music, dance, and spoken word performances, all sharing roots in African culture. Cross Cultural Rhythms will take place on Saturday, October 18th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the 40th Avenue Garage, 1711 Southeast 40th Avenue in Portland. This is a benefit for the Obo Addy Legacy Project. Confirmed performances include Ghanaian drumming and dance, South African boot dance and music, multiple spoken word artists, and more. Again, that's Cross Cultural Rhythms, Saturday, October 18th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the 40th Avenue Garage in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. It is 11:32, and this is Between the Covers. Welcome. I'm your host this morning, and our Lisa Loving, and our guest is novelist Jason Mott. Jason, thank you so much for being here. This is a huge, big deal.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm really excited that you're here. Okay, his newest book, it's a novel, The Wonder of All Things. He's going to be reading from The Wonder of All Things tonight at Powell's on Hawthorne at 7:30 p.m. Jason's first novel, The Returned, which scared me, putting it out, has been made into a television show called Resurrection. And that's why I'm saying it's a very big deal. Thank you so much for being here. A lot of the people who are listening right now don't know a lot about your background, even though Jason, wow, do a quick web search and you are getting hugged everywhere. So from being in this really rural town in
North Carolina,
mm-hmm. Writing I don't know how many manuscripts, and then you send them out, and then no one responds, and then you write The Returned.
Yeah, there you go.
You write The Returned, and suddenly, boom, you are hot. And Brad Pitt? Was it Brad Pitt?
Yes, Brad Pitt's film company, Plan B, were the ones who actually optioned the novel and transformed it into the television series Resurrection.
Right. And so, okay, listeners, this is the thing. I really like books that are about us living on Earth, even if they're novels. I like novels that talk about the difficult spaces, the gray areas between how we live our lives and how we interact with other people. And is there a higher being or not? And what is that higher being? I'm saying, Jason, you just go to the heart of that. And okay, so talk a little bit about The Wonder of All Things. Tell our listeners, what is the book about?
Sure.
Let's just start there.
It follows this young girl named Ava, who she's at an air show with her friend Wash one day, and there's a bit of a tragedy. This plane kind of crashes into the crowd, and people are injured, and she's trying to help.
It crashes. It doesn't kind of crash. It just comes down.
Yeah, exactly. It comes down, crashes. She's trying to help her friend who's injured, trying to stop the bleeding ultimately, and she somehow miraculously heals him. His wounds are suddenly healed, and the entire event is caught on camera and sent to YouTube, and before you know it, the entire world knows about it, and the world wants answers. They want to know how she did this. Did she really do it? Is it kind of trick photography? And before long, it starts tearing at her family. Her family's still trying to sort through a few things, and it's about the outside world kind of coming in and trying to see what this girl's all about.
Okay, and with The Returned, okay? In a way, in a way, it's kind of emotionally about what happens as a human race when we try to stop the bleeding. In a way, The Returned is about one day people that have passed away start coming home.
Yeah, it's about this large global event. Loved ones who have passed away have suddenly begun coming back, trying to re-enter their lives. That's where that story completely followed.
So in my mind, I'm like, okay, that's science fiction. But another way of looking at it is, we've talked about this a little bit, it's kind of also magical realism. How do you see it as you're creating, I don't want to be a spoiler. You're creating an everyday situation and you're pouring some, I want to say, magic over it. How do you define that? Is it science fiction? Is it something else? In your mind, what are the words you use?
I try not to define it too much. Some publicists will say it's a high concept. That's kind of the modern word for it. But ultimately, I just like to take a situation where people behave realistically in unique situations. And these, with The Returned and with The Wonder of All Things, they both center around these very small moments in which something is different than it would be in our day-to-day lives. But the reactions that people have to it are always exactly as I imagine they would be in real life, and which is where the story becomes more complicated. They're very difficult topics when you settle down and think about them in the real world, and it creates good chances to write some interesting things, I think.
So you have now been on a book tour. I know, both of these books are so juicy. I just want to grab them and holding up and just jump into a big discussion. I have a feeling that our time is going to go quickly, though, and we don't get enough of you in the Pacific Northwest. Talk a little bit about, as a person, mm-hmm. right? First of all, novelists aren't normal. Y'all are not normal. You sit alone and you bash keyboards for a long, long, long time, and it's kind of like a message in a banana. You don't know where it's going to go, right?
Right.
But your message is, it's complicated and it's deep, and it's kind of like a spotlight. You can't get away from it if you dig into your books. Like, who are we? What are we doing here? What if something happens that we have no control over at all?
Right.
What brought you to these kinds of novels that are so, they can be searing, really. What is your vision behind what are you writing?
Well, I've always been fascinated by the unexplained. You know, I grew up being a big fan of mythology and folklore and things of that manner. Just these imaginative, fantastical worlds where these things type of happen. But growing up, you know, also was very much fascinated by world history and the reality of the world and the reality of what we do. So from a writing standpoint, the two eventually began to merge together, in which I try to create stories in which we can really look at ourselves through a slightly different lens. I feel like there are certain conversations, whether it be about loss, whether it be about faith, belief, religion, afterlife, whatever it is, we can look at these topics and have a conversation about them through a slightly different perspective when you create these fictional worlds in which the reality of these things is kind of blurred with the fiction of them. You know, the idea that people are coming back and truly trying to be a part of our lives again, you know, we take it for granted that we would love to see someone again that we've lost, but the reality would be much more complicated than that.
Be careful what you wish for, kind of a thing. And it's the same thing with your new book too, I think.
Yes, exactly. It's the miracle of the idea of someone being able to touch and physically heal everyone is an old trope throughout world history and throughout world mythology and religions. You know, it's nothing new. But I tried to take a different angle of approach at it, in that I wanted to really explore, you know, if this really happened in 2014, if this happened, how would it affect the world? What would the reaction be? And I think that right now we are in such a unique environment where so much is explainable through science, that having something that be truly unexplained, caught on video and sent to YouTube, and, you know, the world is so small now thanks to social media, I wanted to create a story that happened in that world, as opposed to being, you know, in the hills of somewhere hundreds of years ago. I want it to be updated.
The thing is that when you say it that way, you know, when someone is able to capture something, the unexplained, on film and send it to YouTube and the whole world, that literally does seem to happen every day. And we don't stop and go, that's weird that happens. You know, whether it's the 80-foot long pilot fish that everybody held up on the beach,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Or that one video of the blue ghost that's flying around the gas station. I don't know if you've seen that. One of my favorite things is Japanese security video, ghost videos, right? So I'm always looking at these ghost videos and going, no, that's how they faked that. Oh, I don't know how they did that. So this is what I really want to ask you, Jason. living someplace, in my mind, where you come from in North Carolina, it's an old place. Am I imagining that?
No, that's very accurate, actually. It's a very, very old town, a very small town, only about 600 people.
What's it called?
It's called Bolton, B-O-L-T-O-N. And it's a town that you pass through. No one really stops there. You know, you kind of come through on the way to someplace else. But at the same time, it's a place where my family has lived for about three or four generations now. And it's just, you know, and the people in that town around me also had the same story. You know, it's a town where people have been there for a long time and the roots run deep, which I think is very intriguing from a writing standpoint, which is why my stories tend to happen in small towns, because I think small towns have that. There's so much history that becomes mingled in the day-to-day interactions that from a writing standpoint, it's fun to push and pull on that tension and see what happens there and how people react to it.
I bring that up because I've been looking at my own genealogy for a couple of years now. I've been obsessing over my own genealogy. And it's in a way, it's the same kind of thing. Like we, in this country, I think that we lose our ancestry really quickly, like just in a couple generations, right? Mm-hmm. So then when you start digging into it, and there's all these digital tools to do that, right? Digital tools, and they're set up like games. It's not what you think, and it can be really shocking and even surprising. And the funny thing about genealogy is it's very geographical as well. Mm-hmm. Our DNA, who we are, is really shaped by our environment in that moment.
Exactly.
And what I'm looking at right now is things that my ancestors did like 250 years ago created issues that people have to deal with right now. Social problems, I'll say, and even health problems. I'm just going to say white trash hillbillies in the Appalachians, right? And yet it was a completely multiracial community, and that I didn't know. And
okay, interesting.
It is interesting, and it took me a lot by surprise. And where I'm going with is that we live our day-to-day lives. We have cell phones now and computers, but there is unexplained stuff all the time. I mean, where is it? Talk about that a little bit. Do you spend your time looking around for what's unexplained as a novelist?
I do. I spend my time actually on a lot of science websites. Science is still the area where we try to explain the most about the universe. I've always been a science nerd and a science geek, and to this day, I still continue to be really fascinated by science websites and just the amount of things that we discover every day and the amount of things that we still can't explain and still don't quite understand becomes very, very fascinating to me. And that's where a lot of my time and research are actually spent, is, you know, looking for these weird anomalies of things that we don't quite understand and how we're trying to figure them out. And then all of a sudden you figure something out. And sometimes there's a bit of sadness there. There have been a few cases where there have been like these long going mysteries, and all of a sudden one is figured out and you feel a little bit less because there's one less mystery in the world. But then, you know, you keep researching, you find out, oh, there's five other mysteries that are sprung up that we don't know about either. So it's an interesting phenomenon, the unexplained, and it's our draw to it as human beings, and its ability to influence our lives and our day-to-day existence is very fascinating.
Mm. And if you've just tuned in, this is Between the Covers on KBOO. We're speaking with novelist Jason Mott. His newest book, The Wonder of All Things, he's going to be reading from that book tonight at Powell's on Hawthorne at 7:30. Listeners, you really need to get over there. This is going to be an awesome event, and our pals come here from a far away, right?
Very far.
There's so few places anymore that we can listen to authors and novelists talk about your own work. So I just think that this is important. We're so often relating to each other digitally as listeners, you are right now, but this is a chance to come and talk with someone in person. So your original novel, The Returned, like I said, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about that book. Okay. And made into a television show, Resurrection. That's who we're talking about, Jason Mott, an incredible guy. Jason, when we could talk about the unexplained, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then we also talk about higher beings, you know, do we believe in religion? I was even just watching, I was reading somebody rant on social media saying, you atheists, why do you care who I believe in? Why do you always take a minute to trash whatever I have to say about the God that I think is important? What's your problem, atheist? And I kind of thought, well, I'm kind of an atheist. Actually, am I an atheist? I'm not even totally sure what that means. And when I look into, this is going to sound nutty, but I've got a little dog. When I look into his eyes, I feel like there's something more on earth. You know, what is religion? What is spirituality? Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm bringing this up is The Wonder of All Things and also The Returned. I'm thinking of another novel by Christopher Paul Curtis called The Watsons Go to Birmingham, 1963. One of my favorite books of all time. It's a young adult novel. You're reading this book. It's a history book. It's funny, funny, funny. And then at the end, what happened in Birmingham in 1963 happens, and suddenly the entire book shifts into a crystalline moment of... I don't want to say spirituality, the intervention of a higher power. And so, and it's shoehorned in there out of the blue. And then you have to stop and think, well, what was it really like to be in that church in Birmingham in 1963? And whether I believe in this God, that God, or any other God, what would I be thinking at that time? And I have to drag that back out here, though, with the wonder of all things. There's an aspect there, you know, the unexplained. Part of it is who made us. Right. Why are we here? And can you go to that a little bit? As you are, you're actually using a really sharp cutting tool to shave through these issues of whether we're, you know, whoever it is or whatever it is we believe in, there are going to be moments where we're going to be reaching out for whatever that is that's beyond what we can see. Talk about how you've tightrope walked on that a little bit with some of these books.
Sure. I try to be as balanced in the equation as possible, both representing, you know, there's characters in all of my novels that are very much religious entities. You know, I grew up in the South in the Bible Belt. You can't grow up in the South and not have some religious background. I think it's pretty much impossible to do that. So with my story set in the South, and again, my being a writer from the South, there are characters in my novels who are very much devout Christians and who are very, very religious people. But then there are also characters who are not. There are characters who are atheists, and there are characters who run the gambit of being in that middle ground. And I think that that's, for me, the best way to take a stab at these larger questions is to just show different perspectives. And I'm a big fan of letting readers walk away with their own opinion of, you know, what the novel's actually saying. One of the funniest things that always happens at interviews and book tour and things like that is people ask me, you know, what are your beliefs on X? And I never answer that question. I always kind of duck that question. And it's because of the fact that religion and beliefs and just our philosophy that gets us through the day-to-day life is such a very personal and unique thing to who we are that I love to have a book where at the end of the day, you can have two readers sitting side by side, have completely different opinions about what the novel was really trying to say and both be correct. I think that it's possible to both be right about that something, and it's fascinating to me.
And as I've been working on my genealogy thing, one thing I did not know about the South and one thing I did not know about the original colonies is that there were people from like every corner of the world there. So there were Muslims, there were Roma, there were people from every corner of the world. And we all sort of grow up learning whatever we learn in kindergarten or elementary school, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that actually describes the world.
Right.
It surprises me a lot.
Yeah.
Now, Jason Mott, okay, I have to come back to this again too, because if you do a quick web search, Jason Mott, right? People all over this country are hugging you. It just cracks me up. People in New York, people in DC, people, you know, so where have you been on your book tour and who have you met like from different places?
I've kind of been a little bit of everywhere so far. You know, the last book tour was, I think, 17 cities. So, you know, New York, San Francisco, Seattle, Portland, Missouri, Atlanta, Florida, Cincinnati, you pretty much name it, I've kind of been there. And it's interesting to get so much different, so much wonderful feedback from people, so many people who have, you know, read the novel. And then when the television show got picked up, that kind of sparked things as well. And even amongst that, you know, cast members read the book, read The Return, and loved it. And I've still, you know, maintained friendships with them, you know, Omar Epps and Francis Fisher and Kurtwood Smith, these wonderful, very talented people who are now playing these characters. They read The Return and loved it. They've read the new book oftentimes in most cases and, you know, absolutely loved it as well. So it's been a bit of a whirlwind, you know. I tell people two years ago I was answering phones at Verizon Wireless, and now I'm an author and just, you know, going around writing full time, which is absolutely wonderful. So it's great to get the hugs and get the wonderful attention from people. I found readers to be just absolutely terrific people. I love meeting readers, which is why I'm really looking forward to tonight at Powell's.
Powell's on Hawthorne at 7:30. So as you go to these different parts of the country where we just assume that there's different characters of different parts of the country, like New Yorkers are going to elbow you in the street or something like that. And in Portland, everybody's going to smile at you. I don't know, you know, but do you feel that when you go to these geographically different places that people are approaching the story the same way? Are they pulling out these deep These are deep philosophical waters. I mean, do you see that, as you said, you like it when people sitting next to each other maybe have a totally different takeaway, but how has it been? Are people in New York more godly or less godly? Or, you know, what's your take on it? How are people different?
It's been very interesting. I will say that the South, the questions are usually much more directed towards, you know, religion. You know, how do you see this in relation to the Bible and things of that manner? But I also encountered a fair amount of that in New York as well. So I think that the locations do make for slightly different kind of discussions and slightly different contexts, but not as dramatically as you might expect. People oftentimes expect that, you know, in the South, everyone is going to be just a Bible discussion the entire time. And it's actually not. You know, I've had conversation with atheist readers in the South, or, you know, Jewish readers in the South, or, you know, just people of different religions talking about the novel in their context. And that's been really interesting. So it's just been very interesting. New Yorkers are kind of fun because there's a few jabs at New Yorkers in the first book and The Return, which is just fun. But the conversations themselves are surprisingly similar. I found that people are people. It doesn't really matter where you're going to. We're all struggling with very, very similar issues in our day-to-day lives. And questions, the questions are eternal. The eternal questions are big and persistent for a reason. There's a reason these topics keep coming up in literature and throughout the history of humanity, because they're questions that we like talking about. We like exploring.
Who are we and why are we here?
Exactly.
We are actually listening to KBOO Portland. And hey, listeners, can I just say how much I love you for being so supportive of the station that we ended our membership drive 29 hours early?
That's
I just
awesome.
Have to say that. It's super awesome. And I know that KBOO listeners love books too. We really love books. We just eat them. We eat books. We are talking with novelist Jason Mott, and he's going to be at Powell's on Hawthorne tonight at 7:30 talking about his newest book. Actually, I have a feeling you'll talk about your second book as well, your first book. You've written several. You've written a few books, and you've been through that slog of trying to get someone to publish. What's your take on what's happening with the book publishing industry right now?
Oh, that's a huge topic. Book publishing is a very difficult topic. It's an industry that's in flux, as most industries in the modern world are in flux. But it is one that I think is changing faster than anyone's ever really suspected. The last 20 years have been dramatically fast change for the publishing industry. The last 5 years have had a dramatically fast change, you know, with the rise of self-publishing, smaller presses, larger presses falling apart, kind of consolidating, buying up different presses. So it's a state now where everyone's really scrambling to find their kind of place and their direction in the publishing industry. And then as soon as you find it, it changes. You know, a year later, the market's different. You've got the situation going on with Amazon. You've got, you know, the independent booksellers kind of struggling to survive wherever they can. It is a very, very strange climate. And if you're a writer trying to send a manuscript out and hopefully get discovered and start your writing career in that atmosphere, it can be a very, very tough atmosphere to work in. Now, the other side of that is that publishers still love publishing books. Like, people, agents, editors, they're still passionate about books. They're as passionate about books as they ever have been. That's probably been one of the most surprising things I've learned in the last couple of years after really kind of, you know, making it over the fence and seeing how publishing works. The people that are in publishing, they're not there because they want to, you know, be bean counters and, you know, turn down people for, you know, for contracts. They're there because they love books. They're there because they love discovering new books. They love hearing new stories, and they love reading as much as people that go out and you buy the book and start reading from there. So if you're a writer, and I love talking about writing and publishing at events. So hopefully people will come out tonight and ask questions, because it's very fun. I think that there's a lot of mystique about writing, and there's a huge mystique about publishing, and I love kind of breaking that down. But if you're a writer and you're still out there trying to get your book published, you know, there are still people looking to publish books. It's still a viable market. It's still tough, but it's always been tough.
And, you know, we've been talking about deep conceptual waters, and that's the part that gets me. I just want to make sure that books are still out there. I mean, there's a caller who will always call and say she's tired of everything being online. She's tired of everything being digital. Mm-hmm. And when the big hurricane comes, when the big earthquake comes, I'm guessing that the electricity will be out. So you're wanting your paper copy of Jason Mott's novels, The Wonder of All Things and The Returned. And we just have a few minutes left. What do you think is the most exciting thing you've seen on your book tour about readers, about communities of people that you've met. Sometimes we sit here in our Portland bubble and we despair about the rest of the world. We're worrying about the rest of this country. What are they thinking? What are they doing?
Right.
But now you're here. You've talked to these people. What is your sense about books, your stories about who we are, where we are, and how the readers that you've met all over the world who are still grappling with that question, you know, what is your sense? Is it good times or bad times?
I think it's good times. There are definitely hard times out there, no doubt about that. But the thing I've found that I find in city to city that I love seeing is that people still care about one another, which sounds like a very, very small statement, but I think it's actually a quite large statement. And part of the drawback of social media and our massive interconnectivity with each other is that while we're able to connect to more people, you know, you can tweet to thousands of people or millions of people, or, you know, post online and, you know, people from all over the world can see it. There isn't much depth there. There's not quite as much connection as we feel there actually is. It's actually a bit of a shallow interaction. But what I've been finding from going to these cities and book tours is that people are still sitting down for coffee with one another. People are still forming these deep interpersonal relationships. And when those bonds are being formed, that's where people are sorting through these hard questions. You know, if someone is you know, lamenting the loss of a loved one, they lean on people. We're still leaning on each other as individuals. We're still connected to each other. We're still a part of this, you know, this globe spinning through space. We're still kind of all tied together, which I think is very reassuring, very, it fills me with a very large sense of excitement. You know, you're always afraid of this detachment happening, but now we're actually still pulling together, and I think that's very exciting.
Are you already working on your next book?
I'm always working on the next book. So yes, I am definitely working on another novel. I can't talk much about it yet because the publisher likes to keep things quiet until it's further along. But yes, I am staying very busy.
All right. And I kind of wish there was a way to get copies of the other books that you didn't sell. Can we do that? I mean, can
no,
we just like...
No, not at all. Those books did not get picked up for a very, very good reason, in that they are badly written. And I will totally admit that. As a writer, it takes time to learn to write better. And those were the ones where I had to learn to write better. So,
you know, sometimes the fun thing about novelists is when novelists stop what they're doing and then they write about how to write, because we always want to see, you know, the 10 steps to a bestseller, you know, is that there's 10 steps. I'm not sure if it's, in some ways, it's the flying fickle finger of fate, you know,
right.
Being in the right place with the right stuff
yes.
at the right time. But,
mm-hmm.
but you make your own luck. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, opportunity and preparation make luck sometimes.
What do you think is the most important thing that our listeners should hear right now about the wonder of all things before we close out this show and make sure everybody comes? What's the most important thing people should know about your work?
It's a book. My work is always about families. I think that family and interconnectivity of people is very important. And just as The Return was a book that wasn't focused on the magic, it was focused on the connection of people, the wonder of all things, that exact same story.
All right. All right. Jason Mott, thank you so much for being here.
Cool. Thank you for having me.
Great. So this is Jason Mott. He's reading from his newest book, The Wonder of All Things, tonight at Powell's on Hawthorne. Be there at 7:30. His first novel, The Returned. You should pick it up while you're there. And read all of his stuff. Read more about him at jasonmottauthor.com. Thanks for listening to Between the Covers, and stay tuned.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
And that concludes the Monday morning programming. And in the room, Wade is getting set up for the noontime jamboree, so don't go anywhere. And before the music starts, we're going to listen to the noon headlines on KBOO Portland.
And now for the KBOO News at Noon for Monday, October 13th, 2014. A holiday is being celebrated for the first time in Portland Public Schools. Earlier this month, the district voted to recognize today as Indigenous Peoples Day. District officials said the day is meant to recognize both the history of discrimination that Indigenous people have faced and the strength of Indigenous students. The second Monday of October is federally recognized as Columbus Day. This has been met with criticism from individuals and organizations across the country who point to the brutalities that Columbus wrought on Indigenous peoples as a reason not to celebrate it. District officials say that Indigenous Peoples Day is meant to be celebrated in addition to Columbus Day, not replace it. Portland Public Schools is part of a growing number of states and municipalities to recognize the holiday. Seattle's City Council also began recognizing the holiday this fall. Portland State University's proposal to create a police force has some students concerned. Some African American students say that the creation of a police force at the school would put their safety at risk. According to the Department of Justice, African American men are more likely to be assaulted or threatened by police. The establishment of a police force is one of the recommendations of a task force created last year to evaluate Portland State's safety practices. Proponents say that establishing a police force could help the university cope with things like sexual assaults and school shootings. Currently, it has one of the lowest ratios of safety officers to students compared to similar institutions nationwide. Portland State's Board of Trustees is expected to weigh in on the proposal in December. A police force would take 3 years to start. Early this morning, protesters marched to St. Louis University to protest police brutality in the St. Louis area. It was part of a weekend of resistance and included scholar activist Cornell West. Some protesters announced their intentions to stay while others dispersed. St. Louis University's president said that he did not know the protest would take place, but would not ask anyone to leave. The protests follow the shooting of Von Derrick Myers Jr. by St. Louis